Welcome back to the Umbrella Academy, the place where superpowers and family trauma go hand in hand, along with a super awesome soundtrack. I'm your co-host, Marissa Garza, and here to help break down everything that happened in season two of the show, The Umbrella Academy, is Mary Kwiatkowski. Mary, how is time over by you today?
Well, I am living in the year 2022, okay. Which I know, so surprising, because this show takes place through many different years, none of which are present day or even close to present day, but I'm still in present day. And you know what? People ask you all the time, like, oh, what time period would you want to live in? Guess what? Now. Now's not great, but the past was not bettered.
This is true. I would rather benefit from the mistakes of everyone before me than have to relive the mistakes of everyone before me. That is for sure. Well, I'm glad we're in the same timeline. That is very reassuring.
It makes it easier for podcasting also if we're in the same timeline.
Yes. We're happy that you, listener, are also here with us. If you are joining us for the second time, we had a kickoff show and a season one recap already out, and you can find those shows and this show in our own Umbrella Academy feed, which you can get access to if you go to postshowrecaps.com/umbrella-academy-feed. It's very like its own little song, Umbrella-Academy-Feed. Or you can also find us in the Everything is Super feed, which is postshowrecaps.com/super or postshowrecaps.com/binge for the Binge Show Recaps feed. So much like the Umbrella Academy, they are everywhere. We are everywhere. And this is our coverage all leading up to season three, which premieres on June 22nd. On that day, we will have premiere coverage out as soon as possible. But between now and then, we're going to have one more show to kind of get us all ready. Recap again, season one, season two, making sure we have the essentials down for you before season three starts. And that will be next week. And then after the premiere, we will have a full coverage binge on the 24th of June. And then every week after that, we will be reviewing episodes. We've got a lot of coverage for you. Are you ready for it, Mary?
I don't know if I'm ready, but I'm here.
That's good. Well, without any further ado, let's just jump in to season two. Much like our other podcast, season one recap, this will be a spoiler-filled look at season two. So we will be talking about some things that happened in season one. We can't really see into the future. We don't have that superpower. So basically, everything we know about Umbrella Academy, we will bring to this conversation. So if you are not caught up and don't want to get spoiled, feel free to join us at another time. But otherwise, let us reflect on what happened last time we were with the Umbrella Academy.
Oh my gosh. Last time. It was the end of the world as we know it. What? It was the end of the world for everyone. And as they say in the beginning of this episode, the first episode of season two, the only people who survived the apocalypse happened to be those six who caused it.
Yeah.
Convenient. The six Hargreaves plus Ben managed to survive the apocalypse only by really quickly jumping back in time. Slightly more successfully time travel wise than five did in season one, but not so much so because they all land in different times. So if you remember from last time, Vanya accidentally ended the world by somehow shooting a ray of sound energy into the moon, which caused the moon to explode.
I think we made this comparison before, but I kind of think of it as like Chaos Wanda-esque energy, you know, like especially in season one, she just like has no idea what her power really is and can do, but it can get to the moon. That much we know.
Yeah, it can get to the moon. There were a lot of other traumatic events that happened right at the end of season one, including Allison losing her ability to speak. Luckily, she didn't die, even though it really looked like it for a second.
Yeah.
Vanya sort of intentionally, sort of accidentally kind of slit her throat, Allison's throat, and severed her vocal cords for a little while. But those are on the mend. And then, yeah, everybody jumps back in time and they all conveniently land in the same location.
That was very handy. Right, very handy. Yeah.
Yes. So they land in a bunch of different times, anywhere from 1960 to 1963, and they're all spread out. So some people have to live for a lot longer in the 1960s than others do. And at the very beginning of the show, we discover that the apocalypse is happening again once Five
Get
finally
out.
Arrives.
What?
Yep.
What?
Yep. Five arrives on November 25th, 1963, and discovers that there's another apocalypse. They brought it with them. They've done messed up the timeline again. And I don't know if this is going to be the case for season three, but I kind of love the idea that this is just a show where a family keeps causing the apocalypse and has to like try to stop it over and over. And they're just creating more and more timelines. It's enjoyable.
I feel like that has to be it, right? Like that has to be the way that we're going, mainly because I don't know where else we can go. You know what I mean? Like we'll find out, definitely, for
Which
sure.
Which begs the question, like if the show ever does end, I don't think it's clear how many seasons there might be, but is it going to end by just them failing and the world finally does end? Or do they somehow win? Is it going to be we jump back in time to the beginning of the first season, like loopholes? Oh, that would be really cool. And then you season one starts again and it's just a closed loop. Oh, that'd be funny.
Yeah, there are many ways it can go. Many ways that can go. But so as you said, like at the end of season one, they time jump to Dallas, Texas, in the span of three different years. And so let's find out like where everyone is. I made a little list of characters and where they're at. So Luther was like the most boring placement. I don't know. He was just like, he's a paid fighter. He's depressed. And he just doesn't want anything to do with like time jumping or family or anything anymore. But what else are you going to do with someone with super strength? It's a way to get money for sure.
It's like super strength, but it's not even that super because clearly other people have the ability to somewhat hurt him, right? It's not like he's invincible. It's just like he's slightly stronger than everyone else. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Strength plus.
I think that the coolest part, or not me, I don't know if coolest is really, but the most notable part of Luther's timeline is that he is working for Jack Ruby, who is a real person. This was something I was doing on this watch, was looking up like how many Easter eggs or elements of the show were grounded in truth and reality and how many were made up. And there's definitely a mix, but Jack Ruby was a American nightclub owner who murdered Lee Harvey Oswald, who, you know, was believed to be the killer of John F. Kennedy. And so this all ties together in this plot line, but yeah, it's definitely interesting that he's working for him, considering the fact that Luther at this time like does know who Jack Ruby is. And so it's not like this is a surprise. He goes back in time and has the knowledge of history, you know, from the future, which is one of my favorite elements of this show and this season, is just like the choices that each person makes when they go back in time based on their knowledge of history.
Yeah, I think there's another show which has an actor connection that does a little bit similar things with this. It's For All Mankind on Apple TV Plus. It's about the space race and what would have happened if we'd lost the space race. But Mr. Hargreaves is also in that show as well. But it plays with history a little bit. Like in this case, like you were saying, characters have knowledge of that history. But in For All Mankind, it's us, the audience, that also have knowledge of the history. Mm-hmm. So playing with that is always really fun. And I mean, like Back to the Future did that too, right? Like that was my first time travel movie. Just knowing what's going to happen when and how that can impact your decisions is, I think, something that you think about as a human anyway, regardless of if you know the history or not. Like it's somewhat relatable, even though I haven't time traveled in that way.
And it's something that like happened both in season one and season two, like the tone, the characters, where they're very they're like very nonchalant about a lot of this kind of thing. They're like, oh well, we're back in time, oh well, like that seems to be mostly the attitude. And that's kind of what happened in season one when Five shows up after being missing for years and years, and they're like, oh, look, it's five. That's kind of weird. Like, it's just the nothing seems to really phase anyone. And I find that to be like just refreshing, because it's not a show that there's so many dramatic moments, but they decide not to lean heavy into the drama.
Yeah.
So they don't try to do too many things. They kind of like pick a lane and stay in it, which I like.
Yeah. One thing to note about Luther at the beginning of seeing Luther in this series is that he hasn't found Allison at this point.
Right.
Like he's alone. He's just working for Jack Ruby, making money, punching people, and being depressed.
And it doesn't really seem like any of them, I mean, maybe Luther a little bit, but no one really seems to have put a whole lot of effort into finding their siblings.
Like, well, I wonder if that's like because Luther, have lived like this life of being together with them, like all this time. Like, I don't know how to really process the fact that I've jumped back in time and I don't know where my siblings would be and if I would want to find them. I guess, I mean, it's kind of like that thing when I was a kid, like told if I get lost, just stay in one place. Mm-hmm. Like just stay where you are.
So let the adults find the you. Game of, yeah. Like, let the other person find them. Which is so funny because like, I mean, we'll get to when we talk about Vanya, but there are missing persons, like notices going out for her and then no one's just seeing. I guess no one's reading the paper.
Which is, yeah, you know, something I don't know if I would remember to do if I came from 2019, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, Luther really has like kind of the most boring segment. I wasn't sure, like when I first started this season for the first time, I wasn't sure if they were going to do like several episodes where everyone was separate. But by the episode 2 and 3, like pretty much everybody has at least connected with one or more of their siblings and they all kind of know what's going on at this point. So a lot of them don't have as detailed individual plots because they get together pretty quick. Like Luther, Diego, and 5 all get together by like episode 4.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have like their own little storylines and things that they're mm-hmm. doing for sure. Speaking of Diego, we learned that Diego is committed in an institution. I don't know if he did this of his own free will, but he is in a mental institution. He's obsessed with the assassination of JFK, which again, I mean, if you could stop it, would you stop it? I mean, I get it. I get where he's coming from. And he's made a new friend in this institution by the name of Layla.
I think it's Lila. Actually.
Lila.
The way he says it is Lila, but every time I read it, I read it is Lila, who is a whole character unto herself.
Oh, hold on one second. I lost you around 12:54.
And we're back. Internet.
You are back. Okay. Yeah. So I said, Lila Lee, and you were like, I think it's Lila, yeah. But every time I read it,
I think it's Lila. Yeah. I wrote down the pronunciation as Lila, but Lila is a character we learn a lot about pretty quickly. And I know the first time I watched this was a big surprise to me when you get kind of the Lila reveal. I think it has to do mostly with like Diego's when he lands, because he lands on September 1st, 1963. So he lands pretty close to the assassination. And so I think that's why he like pretty much instantly lands, sees on a television Kennedy, and then is like, whoa, this is it. This is my mission. This must be why I'm here. He's very single-minded and doesn't seem to have spent any time trying to find his family or anything. He's nope, I'm here, 100% Kennedy situation, which is interesting. But yeah, everyone, you know, he tried to contact the police, tried to contact the president. Everybody thinks that he's just, I don't know, making this up or whatever. And so they put him in the institution where he meets Lila, who is yet another character. I said this about Klaus in season 1, another character who I just feel like needs to take a shower the whole first season. I'm like, ugh, every time she's on screen, like her and Diego both. Diego needs a haircut so bad. It's really, really painful.
He does need a haircut. I could see it.
He hasn't even been here that long. How fast does his hair grow where he's developed shoulder length hair in like 3 months of being here? It's not even that long because he arrives in September. And then when we're watching the show, it mostly takes place on November 15th. So it's a month and a half later. And his hair has grown so long.
Super powered hair growth. That's so the thing. Oh, you man. Know?
maybe. It's a lot.
But I will say, I think it fits his character better. So I can see why he does have longer hair.
Yeah, at least in this season. They all give, every character kind of gets a different look, with the exception of Luther and Five, who look exactly mm-hmm. the same. I feel like Vanya's, it's mostly in her clothing, but like Klaus, Diego, and Allison all have pretty different looks, which is kind of nice.
Yes. Yeah. I really enjoyed Diego, you know, being confined at the start of the season, like not being able to escape, not being able to, and also sometimes not wanting to do those things. He just kind of, you know, surrendered to the situation and was talking about his dad, but also like super convinced that he can stop the assassination of JFK. I found the fact that he was willing to create a relationship with Lila interesting because of what happened in last season. You know, has he healed from the death of his partner, or giving himself that opportunity? It was surprising to see it happen so soon. Comparatively, yes, I know their time is a soup, but. I was just like, oh, he's like letting someone in so soon.
Yeah, there's comparing season one and season two, there have definitely been romantic interests in most of the characters. I was going to say except for Five, but there was the whole Dolores thing. So
yes.
Lest we forget Dolores. yeah, I think. Is anyone safe from the pangs of love? I don't think so. I think everybody did. But for whatever reason, in both seasons, I mostly think about Diego. Maybe it's just because the love interest in both seasons is like a pretty active character in the plot. I mean, definitely Leonard was, but in different ways since Leonard was the villain. Yeah, I like Diego. I like his relationship with Lila. I like their dynamic. I think they flow a little bit better than him and Patch did. But I mean, it's just, it's a very different way. It's almost like, even though we're going to find out that Lila's also from the future, they both seem to like, it fits his relationship in the given time period, right? Like when he's in 2019, him and Patch seem a little bit more better matched just because they're modern. I don't know.
Like, so yes, Diego's in an institution and making new friends. And then we've got Vanya. Vanya is living the complete opposite life. She's on a farm taking care of a child named Harlan, who seemingly, like, I don't think we ever hear officially, but I'm assuming he has autism, which is not an assumption anyone should ever make. But he's nonverbal. He is, you know, he needs some assistance and some help, and Vanya is providing that for him. His name is Harlan, and he's staying with this family, and she doesn't remember the fact that she like almost ended the world.
Yeah, she doesn't remember almost anything. She remembers her name, and that's it. She doesn't know she's from the future. She doesn't know she has a family. She doesn't know anything, because she possibly because of the power that had taken her over in season one, possibly because she gets hit by a car instantly in this season, she forgets most things, which I think was necessary for the plot in order for us, the viewer, to not feel like angry at Vanya the whole time, right? Because Vanya destroyed the world and like murdered a lot of people.
And like hurt her sister and like all of this stuff.
Like, yeah, we get it. You had a really hard childhood. That's understandable. Like, in some ways, they did at least give her enough reason to go full villain last season, but we needed to like really scale that back in this season for us not to be like, hey, you're kind of evil. I don't know if I appreciate watching this.
I also appreciated it from like not having to re-traumatize with Vanya. Like, not having to have her remember was just kind of like a really good way to just wipe the slate clean and have her kind of discover her powers in a different way and not have to be like, oh yeah, remember that time when your dad told you this one thing about that? You know what I, we get a little bit of that, but it wasn't like the center of her story. And we didn't have to go through all of that trauma with her again. It was just like, hi, I'm Vanya. I live on a farm. Like, that's what I know.
I was a little annoyed that we had to go through the whole like Vanya discovers her powers again, except for the fact that at least this time around it's not combined like horrifying trauma that your whole life is not what you thought it was, right? Like when Five shows up and it's like, yeah you've got powers, so do the rest of us, it's like, okay, well, I mean, I didn't remember anything about my life, so I guess if that's the thing, that's a thing. Okay.
Well, and the fact that she was like so trusting of her siblings when she saw them, based on the fact that of what happened to her last time she trusted someone, was also really interesting to, you know, it was easier to accept because she couldn't remember anything. It was easier to be like, oh, I guess, you know, if I was longing for my family and then someone showed up and was like, hey, I'm, you know, your family and knew stuff about me, I'd be like, okay, I get it. As opposed to having to go through, why don't I trust anyone? And all of this stuff all over again.
Exactly.
So it was fun watching her on a farm.
Yeah, I liked it. It was different. She was living a different life. Everybody's living very different lives from each other. And it's kind of fun when they meet each other. Like when I think Diego and Allison, or no, Luther and Allison at one point are talking and they're just like, oh, where's so-and-so? And Luther's like, yeah, Allison, or Vanya, just on a farm. And like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay,
cool. Makes sense.
Whatever. Yeah. And also to note that she's there with Harlan's parents.
Yes.
Sissy and Carl. And she begins a very close friendship and then sort of romantic relationship with, not sort of, it is a romantic relationship with Sissy. Who is also just a gem in the season. Really enjoy, okay, hate Carl, but I enjoy Sissy. Carl's just a jerk from like day one.
Yeah, it was a really great way to kind of, as they do with Allison's story, but tell the story of women during that time and the choices that women had to make, specifically, and gay women in this context. Because, or queer women, because I don't know 100% Sissy's sexuality, if she's a lesbian or if she's bisexual or pansexual or anything like that, but she has relationships with both Carl and Vanya. And so being able to talk through those choices from her perspective was really interesting, because it's something that you don't necessarily get in a period piece like the Umbrella Academy.
Yeah. And that's what's interesting with the time travel, right? Is because with Allison, Klaus, and Vanya, we all see like the effects of time on each of them and differently. There's a really gripping scene with Klaus in a restaurant where a man keeps yelling at him and literally telling his nephew to punch the queer. And it's like very disturbing. And you see Klaus being like, oh gosh, if, you know, every time I've heard that, you know, throughout my life, because he's lived in a different time, but then how has to go back in time and suffer. It's like completely differently, right? Like it's interesting, but it's hard to watch at moments, and also like very, like you were saying, like a very interesting way to analyze how people, how life was different at that time, right? Vanya's chilling on a farm. And speaking of Klaus started a cult, sort of by accident, unclear. Klaus's story is so funny. I love the fact that all Klaus does is use song lyrics as like genius, right?
This was genius. His whole story, I was like, of course he did. Of course he started a cult. Of course the cult is named Destiny's Children.
Yeah,
and of course,
so good.
He's using like "Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls" as like scripture, because, you know, I gotta say, sometimes, you know, when you're young, sometimes song lyrics are scripture to you. Like, it does make sense.
It like really speaks to every kid on MySpace or early Facebook, where it's just like all of your statuses are like, you know, why'd you have to go and make things so complicated? And you know what I mean?
Or like your AIM away message with the song lyric was like some sort of subtweet before there were tweets about some other thing.
This is so deep. It's like, this song lyric speaks to me. And if I write it here, people are going to wonder, why am I feeling this way? Yeah. And so that's basically how Klaus is living his life. He has been clearly utilizing his power with Ben a bit more in this season, because Ben is able to, like at the end of season one, Klaus was able to sort of project Ben in a physical sense too, even though Ben couldn't be seen by other people. Ben could interact with Klaus. And so like in this season, he's constantly doing things like picking stuff up. He hits a typewriter. He's lifting Klaus up to make Klaus look like he's levitating, that sort of thing, which actually makes a lot more sense when you think of Klaus's like ghost related, spirit related powers, right? Is that he can sort of bring forth Ben a little bit more solidly into the world. So they work in conjunction there. And I do love like Ben and Klaus's constant, I don't know, like respect and annoyance for each other, just like constantly. Like they're both so selfish in their desires throughout this season, but they're like so mad when the other person's like ideas don't line up with theirs.
Yeah, I mean, it's very brothers, very siblings related. And Klaus and Ben are the only two to land at the same time. Like it was interesting and stay connected throughout this entire time. And even, you know, to the point where Klaus isn't telling his siblings that Ben is around at certain times. And I really enjoyed seeing Ben, you know, come into more of a character as opposed to an observer in this episode or in this season. He has a lot of opinions about what Klaus does and how Klaus does it and interferes with those choices. And, you know, we do see later on, like at one point he embodies, like possesses Klaus, like goes into that world. And so
in probably the most uncomfortable scene of the season.
Yes.
I don't know why that scene bothers me so much, but it does. Yeah, it's that's weird. But and they arrive in 1960, so they're there for the longest, which is why he has a long amount of time to create his cult, since they arrive in 1960 before everyone else.
And he has traveled, like he goes to India, he's in California, he lands in Dallas and ends up in Dallas, but he's all over the place.
Right, and I guess that makes sense for why other people couldn't find him for a while, because he's like hanging out in Mexico.
Well, and amassing all of these followers that will follow him everywhere and identify themselves with the tattoos on their palms like he has. It was such a great call for him to have a cult. I really enjoyed his storyline this season for sure.
Yeah, and it's like he never – I don't know if he initially set out to create a cult. I think he was more I just kind of want fame and money.
Well, he was
accidentally more like the cult.
I have no money. I know I can charm people. Let me get as far as I can. Like resource gathering. I think he was like resource gathering along the time. Oh, I want to go here. You can take me there. Cool. Great. Or, oh, you have a place I can stay, a mansion I can use. Cool. Great. Like, I think at the end, or he does become friends with like a rich woman who ends up giving him all of the stuff. And he just used the situation to get what he needed, which is very Klaus, very true to Klaus.
Very much so. Klaus is fun. I mean, I said it in season one that he's my favorite, and he's my favorite, and I think Allison's my second in both seasons.
Well, yeah. So Klaus and Ben are hanging out with cult and cult members, and Allison, as you just mentioned, she has taken quite a what some could call quote unquote traditional route when it comes to expending her time in the 60s. She is married and to not a member of her family, thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
She's married to a man named Ray, who is an activist during this time. And I really, really did enjoy being able to see this part of history being played out, because Ray is an activist with the S, I forget it. It's like the Southern, the SS, SJCC. It's an organization that Martin Luther King was also involved in when it comes to racial activism around the time, and just like how local it would be. It was really cool to see how there were meetings in hair salons and sit-ins at local diners. Not everything was as big as what we might read in history books. It was happening, you know, like at the local level. And I really appreciated being able to see that through Allison's eyes this go around. And she has not used the rumor. She has not used her rumor power this entire time she's been there. Mainly, I mean, she lands, and she has like no voice because Vanya's cut her vocal cords. So she remains quiet for some time, really until she meets Ray. And then at that point, she decides she's not going to use the rumor. She's going to experience life.
And I understand that from the point of how destructive her power was in season mm-hmm. one, both with Vanya at the end and also with her losing her daughter and her marriage in the present timeline because of her rumor ability. And so she mentions in this season, like she feels like she's earned everything that she's mm-hmm. done and accomplished, including her marriage, her career, etc. One of the most striking scenes for me, like I always think about first time I watched it and when I was watching the very beginning of the first episode, when Allison lands, runs into a restaurant and people point at a sign that says whites only. And it's like, oh my gosh, wow, this is probably not what, you know, not what she was expecting. She's like, crap, now I went back into time to a place that is much worse for me. And it's interesting how she also like they all have slightly different looks, like I mentioned before, but hers, like she lands and she's got like the high heels and the leather jacket and her curly hair and everything, and then like all of that changes to fit more of the time period. So she's the one who I think like has the plot that's the most like you said traditional. It's like it's the most sort of like normal for what would be happening in that time. I mean, maybe Vanya living on a farm would be, but everyone else is doing kind of like, like working for a nightclub owner as a fighter and stuff. Like, and everybody's not doing that. But like, then if she was in this time, you would believe she probably would be doing this as well.
Yeah.
I do find it interesting that she got married, just considering the fact that, like, I don't know. Didn't her and Luther like kind of express some of their feelings at the end of last season? I mean, it's been a couple of years, you know, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think her wanting to earn love and not have it, like, I know her and Luther had like expressed their dancey love feelings for each other. But I think her relationship with her husband was questioned as to whether, you know, she used the rumor on her husband to create that life with him and, mm-hmm. you know, have her daughter and all of that. So I can understand her wanting to explore what that is like, especially if she doesn't know, like, who, if anyone's coming for her, when, what's going on. I mean, I would assume if I had, you know, I'm not saying that my sister doesn't have superpowers, but I would assume that my sister would come find me. I know that much. I know she'd find me, superpowers or not. So it was just interesting on that respect. Like I could assume someone's going to come find me.
Are you surprised that we don't hear very much from Allison about Claire, her daughter?
Until like the end where she's like, can I talk to Claire? I was like, oh yeah, Claire.
Yeah. It's like you would think – I guess they could have had this where she lands and she just spends a lot of time missing her daughter and stuff. And I feel like they thought, that's going to bog down the character too much where we want her to do different things. And so we can't have that be her sort of only plot line, especially because that was so much of her plot in season one. But also realistically, like if you're a parent and then you land in a timeline mm-hmm. and you're like, my child doesn't exist in this timeline, but like, oh my gosh, do I need to get back to them? And I feel like that would be like most people's kind of single-minded track, but maybe she just realized like, I don't have any control over time traveling. So I guess I'll just hang out here until Five shows up. Like, it seems like most of them kind of had the attitude of, I'm just going to kind of play this out until we go back to our normal time. They're not really acting like this is the way their whole life is going to be, except for maybe Allison, because she is a little more established.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like they went back to like the 1500s. Like, they don't have to like wait out millennia. That's not even a millennia, but a century. But I think what I would have appreciated in Allison's storyline in regards to Claire is just some sort of mention of the fact that the work that she's doing could impact Claire's life in the future. Mm-hmm. And that it wasn't until the end where it was like, oh, I can go see Claire now. Like, that's when Claire came into the conversation. It would have been nice just to get like a little like name drop, or like, I'm doing this for Claire, or something for Claire to remind us that she's still thinking of her. Cause I have to assume she was, but I totally forgot as an audience member, I totally forgot about Claire until the end.
Especially because in the first episode, in the scene where you meet Ray, he gives her a book about the moon, and he's like, oh, you're always looking up at the moon and stuff, which was a tie between her and Luther. So she's thinking about Luther and the moon. It would have been nice if they also had, I guess, tied that to Claire as well somehow.
Yeah.
But, oh, well. But she has an interesting plot, and I can't remember if we mentioned it or not, but yeah, she wasn't able to speak for a year, and then her vocal cords healed, and she was able to speak after that. So we're all back to good old Allison.
It's worked out, except for she's made the conscious choice not to use her power.
Right, because like we said last season, she has one of the most powerful abilities that would come in clutch constantly. And so the only way to like make it not just completely break any tension in the plot is to build in that she has a reason for not wanting to do it.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. Well, that leaves us. We've talked about everyone except for our favorite time traveling teenager, Five. So Five lands, I think he lands at the end of the world again. So we see him again, like, oh man, this kid, he's always jumping from end of the world to end of the world. I think in this season, they call it Doomsday instead of the apocalypse. I don't know if that's like a time choice or what, but he's at Doomsday and he's visited by a friend known as Old Hazel. We get Old Hazel. He's all gray. He's got like gray beard, gray hair. And he's like, listen, yo, you have to save your family. And I have to take you, because if you don't, you're going to die and you can't save your family if you're dead. So he takes Five back. And this is where Five realizes he has to put the team back together. So he goes back to Dallas and starts collecting his siblings and makes a friend in Elliot, who owns a TV store, or babysits a TV store basically, and who has seen all of the siblings arrive in Dallas.
Yes. And that's sort of where the season starts.
Yeah.
Five is definitely just like used in this season to be the person who's gathering everyone together and kind of, you know, I love the image of like little, 13-year-old Five being the like bossy old man again. That's great. But I just don't understand, like, Hazel, why did you only take him back in time 10 days? Like, give him more time. There was no reason you couldn't have gone back a year. But instead, it's always got to be like, oh, we've only got 8 days. We only got 10 days to save the world. So, yeah. And, November 15th, 1963 is when the show really officially starts, where we're seeing everybody's present day in terms of the season plot lines. And oh my gosh, poor Five. He's just so frustrated with everybody. Nobody cares about the apocalypse except for him.
Well, and he's got a tough job because he's like, I already had to like convince everyone the apocalypse was like important the first time. And then we like time jumped. And so now are they going to want to help me again? Like, I totally get where he's coming from. I enjoyed his creative use of newspapers, as you had mentioned before, because he's like, he didn't know where everybody was. So he's putting out like missing persons ads for people. And I think like Vanya sees one. Like, I think everyone sort of sees one at some point.
Yeah, like and Vanya's name is out, also out in the papers because Carl is putting like a missing mm-hmm. person's ad for her. And then they see an ad or a wanted poster. What is it? And maybe it's not a wanted. Yeah, it's something like that for Diego. Because he
yep.
tried to kill Lee Harvey Oswald as well. So
he's very determined to stop this assassination.
I love when they talk to Diego and he's like, yeah, I'll help you with the apocalypse just as soon as I save Kennedy. First things first, save Kennedy. Second thing, stop the apocalypse. Third thing, I'm going to need you to send me back in time so I can kill Hitler. Like he's got a whole plan. Diego's like, look, I'm just going to be a time traveling vigilante. Like, I don't care about messing up timelines. We're just doing that, which is pretty great. And, but yeah, what about the villains of this season?
Yeah.
Besides the apocalypse, which is just
the which constant. Is a constant villain. Yes. Yeah. Well, our good friend the Handler shows back up in this season. She's alive. We thought she was not alive, but she is alive. And she's back with a vengeance, like literally a vengeance. She wants to get revenge and take over the commission. And so we see her at the beginning of the season just like, there, like we don't really know what she's up to, but she has made it to this story somehow.
We meet the Handler, who is because of the metal plate in her head from some previous mission.
Yes,
the bullet did not completely kill her that Hazel had shot her with at the end of the first season. Which is, I was kind of annoyed. I was like, oh. Again, the Handler. Mm. I don't know why villains frustrate me. Just like, but she's at least kind of a fun villain. And we meet another one of her sort of coworker / nemesis, AJ Carmichael, who is also in the comics. And I'll talk more about that when we get to the comic differences section. But he's a human with a fish tank as a head and a fish head. It's very confusing.
That was like straight out of like that is when you look at the TV show and say this used to be a comic book.
Yeah,
like that is a moment that can only happen in the comics,
for sure. And he's interesting. And then we have some minor villains who are sort of Hazel and Cha-Cha of this season, but like there's less personality to them. Like we follow a lot of Hazel and Cha-Cha's plot. This one it's more like we just need some bad guys following everyone around so we can have a couple of fight scenes. Who are the Swedes? I believe at one point they say they're twins, but they don't really look like twins. Maybe they're brother. I've just been calling them the brothers in my notes. It's these three guys who they don't really even like talk.
No, there's lots of nonverbal nods, communication, but they do get messages from the commission. We do see them get, you know, those mnemonic tube things. And they do seem to have some familial connection, whether they be brothers or twins or something, because they are very sad when they die. Like, you know, they're very sad when, because they don't all die at the same time. But there's definitely, you know, a connection there. I called them the white-haired mafia. So brothers is much more concise than the white-haired mafia.
They have a very
but they have that like type look. Of
yeah
yeah. Yeah.
The Handler calls them Huey, Dewey, and Louie at one point as well. I believe they're the ones whose names are Axel, Otto, and the third one. Otis? No, Oscar. Axel, Otto, and Oscar. So they're hanging out and they're just kind of following everyone around, but it's certainly not as fun as Hazel and Cha-Cha from last season.
Yeah, I know. I was really excited to see Hazel pop up. I had a feeling, you know, no Cha-Cha, but I was excited to see Hazel. I was disappointed that he didn't continue throughout the season.
Well, I think Cha-Cha died in the apocalypse.
She did.
Pretty sure that happened. Hazel didn't. Hazel time traveled with Agnes at the end of season one, and this was kind of sad at the beginning of this season. He says that Agnes died of cancer, but they had 20 good years together. Aww. Which I guess is, I mean, 20 years is better than nothing, but still kind of sad.
Very spoilers for Avengers, very Steve Rogers of him.
Mm, yeah.
So that is kind of where everyone's at, kind of around the start of the series. Before we get into some plot points, we're not going to do every episode by episode, but we do want to talk about some major things that happened this season. But before we do, let's take a little commercial break and we'll be right back.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Back. So what do you want to talk about this season? There are a couple of things that happened, some big things that happened. I think one of the most interesting storylines for me is between Allison and Ray and their relationship and the whole, like, I married a person from the future aspect. I married an activist. I have a superpower. You know, it was one of the more relational storylines. What was your take on it?
Poor Ray. Like, everything is going well for Ray. He's all happy. He's got this great wife. He's, you know, got an awesome life here. Well, I'm not going to say an awesome life. It's the 60s and it's not great. But he starts to realize around the time when he first gets arrested, because Allison's going to start saying, "I heard a rumor." And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, why do you keep saying that line? Like, what does that mean? But she's not fully doing it yet. She just, like, is considering it. What are you saying? And later on, after they do a sit-in, he's going to get pretty brutally beat up, like, possibly could have been killed in that moment. And so she finally does rumor a cop to say, like, I heard a rumor you walked away. And he's like, what did you do? Like, this is a trope that I kind of hate in shows and movies, though, where it's like, someone just saved your life, but you're more hung up on, like,
yes,
the fact that they lied to you. Agreed. Or the fact that they, you know, whatever, did something that you don't understand. He's had a hard day, because in one day he met two different people, Klaus and Luther, who both claim to be Allison's brother. And he's just like, what is happening? Who is this person that I married? And I think he starts to think that she's like a spy or like, you know, very confusing. And he's definitely the person who, like, you kind of get a fun reveal when they finally sit him down and tell him everything that's going on. Yeah. He's just got that, like, you know, shell shocked. What's happening?
Yeah. And he's really sweet. Like, he doesn't want to be, there is a point in the story where Allison is like, do you not want to remember any of this? Because she has to go back, like, at some point, right? So it's like, do you want me to rumor you so you don't have to remember any of this? And he's like, I don't want to not remember you. Like, yeah, there is real love there. At the same time, he's fighting the good fight. He's doing, you know, all of the things that need to be done during that time. He's doing sit-ins. He's got pamphlets. He's organizing. He's getting people together, which is also really hard work. So he's got, like, in my mind, Ray has the most stress. I know there's, like, not a lot of, like, big time travel for Ray, but he has, like, the weight of racial politics, being a Black man in the 60s, and then also, you know, his wife's situation.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on.
He has a lot going on, a lot on his plate. And I don't know. I almost wish that he had come to the future with them at the end, just because it would have been kind of fun to see him in the next season. But I also think that's kind of the beauty of this show, is that they don't need to take every plot line from one season to another. They can kind of stand alone. You know, we don't, like, while we miss Hazel and Cha-Cha, we can have a season without them and it makes sense. We don't need, you know, Leonard Peabody to be the main villain one season after another. But I did love their plot lines, and it was one of the ones that I was like most interested to see. The structure, the way they tell the story this season is sort of in that like flashback way that they did season one, where they'll sort of start out in present day and then occasionally flashback to say, okay, and here's what happened with Allison over the last couple of years to get her to this point, and now here she is now. But they don't necessarily tell everything linearly, which is why it was like whatever the TV version is of a page turner, where I was like, oh, I want to find out more about their story. I want to find out more about how she got to this point, how they got married, because it's several episodes before they give her backstory of how her and Ray met and how they got together and all of that.
Yes. It does take a while to get there, but I'm glad we got there in the end. And it, Allison, you know, still has her big sister pull when she does get to see Vanya at some point. You know, there are a lot of the season for her does focus on her relationship with Ray, but when everyone's back together, Allison does remember who she is. She does have this like this point of, do I stay or do I go? Like, which Allison do I want to be? And she works through that and ultimately ends up choosing the Allison that is, you know, part of the superhero family and has all of these brothers and sisters and wants to stay with them. But I really appreciated like the time that they gave the character to kind of come to that point. It wasn't just like, no, I don't want to go, or no, I want to stay. It was like there's good to both of these stories, and they gave her an opportunity to choose. I thought that was one of the interesting parts for me.
Yeah, several of the characters have to make a choice of like, do I want to go back to who I was in present day, who, you know, who the real me is, or do I want to stick with this new version of myself I've created? And you have some people like Klaus who are like, please get me out of this new version I created for myself. Oh no, what have I done? And then people like Allison who have to think a little bit more about it because they are doing important work here, and they have made sort of a more full-fledged life for themselves at this point. And it definitely skews based on like pretty much in the order of who's been there the longest, right? Mm-hmm. Like who had sort of the most amount of time to create that life. Yes. And I think another person, and kind of for different reasons, but like Vanya has to debate that same thing constantly, because also with Vanya's like lack of memory of her past self, she's like, hey, my life here with Sissy is kind of that's my life. Like this is my, you know, thing. And I don't know. I was a little bit like frustrated that we boxed Vanya into a very similar plot line that they had in season one, with like kind of a love story, kind of a discovering yourself thing again. But I do think it was necessary just based on how we ended up here. But at least this one is a much more pure love story without the like hidden agenda that happened in season one. Like this is a lot more mutual, and like, I don't know, we didn't talk about it much in season one, but like we don't even know if Leonard really even liked Vanya or not,
right?
He was just 100% using her, whereas Sissy here is like, no, this is 100% genuine.
Well, and one of the things that I discovered trying to heal from trauma is like, what matters is the story that I'm telling myself, right? So I appreciated the fact that we got a similar story than with Vanya that we got in season one, but from a different perspective, because this could be the story that she lives on going forward. It doesn't have to be this manipulative, I blew up the world, everyone has to be afraid of me type of story. It could be this really beautiful love story between her and Sissy. Like the way it wasn't forced, it was just like very natural from what I could, you know, from what we saw of it. And also like very wholesome and very like they're connected for their love of Harlan, her child, Sissy's child as well. And building like that kind of life together in, you know, the 1960s. So you do have some conflict there, but it wasn't like manipulation, like from Leonard
right.
that we got before. It was more societal pressure and societal under confining, as opposed to, you know, straight up manipulation from someone.
Exactly. Like in the first episode, Sissy is going to talk about how she feels like she's not living the life that she wants to. And it, with Carl, like she's like, oh, Carl's a nice man. This is clearly what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. Like following mm-hmm. the path, you know, you get married, you have a kid, you support your husband, etc. But I dream of running away. I dream of thinking about if he ever leaves me and what do I do? I'm saving up money for that moment. Here's my future. Here's what I really want. And when you combine that with someone like Vanya, who's from a future, from a different, you know, place, and who has this, okay, this is like a trope in a lot of fan fiction where someone will go back, but it's like, oh, they went back in time. Oh, you're wearing jeans? What kind of pants are those? Oh, you're so different. Like, oh, you have such different philosophy. And I kind of feel like in some ways Vanya's like that, even though Vanya doesn't have their memory, they have like their person is more more progressive than the time that Sissy is living in. And so I think that Sissy sees in Vanya also that like unique future that she wishes she could have.
Yeah. And then you have that juxtaposed with Carl, who's like, no, this is the life I signed up for. This right. is the wife that I want to have. And, you know, it's all about me because I'm the man of the house. And this is how I have to, you know, live my life, because I'm sure he also was given specific things by society in terms of how he should live his life as well. But that's where the pressure is coming from a little bit more, which is, it, I think, a little bit more understandable. It's not healthy, but it's definitely a bit bigger than just one person.
Right. Definitely.
And through the course of her stay with Sissy and Carl and Harlan, as I was mentioning before, he's nonverbal, and he gets himself into a situation where he's running. I think the Swedes are after him at this point. Like, he's running away.
There's two different points where he's running away. The first time he has, as they're referring to it in the show, at least in an episode, because he hears mm-hmm. Vanya talking about potentially leaving, and I think that upsets him, and so he runs out into a pond that Vanya uses her powers to sort of blast the water up in the air. And Vanya's powers,
they're just everything.
Everything can do a lot. She could use sound to do anything she wants, and so she saves him and gives him CPR, and there's some like red glowy. It's one of those situations in a show where you're like, is this really happening, or is this just like a symbol for the audience that something is happening? Like, can other people see the little red glowy thing going into his mouth? I don't know. And then later on, he is also in another yes. chase. Yes.
Yes. Though, yeah, the saving from the lake thing, I think for me was really interesting to see, because it was Vanya in control of her powers, and yes. She was in control of them innately. Like, she wasn't told, there was no instruction. So in right. in the prior,
intentionally using them for a purpose, and
yes, and very instinctively. Like, she yes. just knew what she had to do. She knew that she could save Harlan, and she just did it. And it wasn't like because she went to training every morning at 7 a.m. like her father had her do at the academy. So I think it was really. I really enjoyed being able to see her kind of just know what to do and just doing it, not having the show explain it too much.
Definitely. Because Vanya has such useful powers for a big fight that we kind of need Vanya to like get on board with those pretty quick.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you know what to do.
Yeah. And it's the opening scene of the apocalypse in this season. It has like all of the siblings working together. It's very Avengers, and it's very like, oh, look at them. They've all mastered their powers, and they're all wearing matching outfits yeah. and everything. And I always think that scene's kind of funny, because based on where they actually get during the like reset timeline, it's like, how did they get to that point where they were all connected, working together, like practicing their powers? Like, I wonder how that worked in that timeline.
Oh, well. Yeah. Maybe we'll find out. Maybe that's what season 3 is about.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. Anything else we want to say about the Vanya, Sissy, Carl storyline?
No, except for the fact that the most famous Umbrella Academy meme is including a Vanya scene where Vanya and Vibe are both like driving past each other and they're looking out at the car. I'm sure people have seen that, even if you're unfamiliar with the LA Academy. It's two cars going in opposite direction with each of them staring at each other intently. And love that. Love that meme. It was great. I remember seeing it last summer for the first time.
It's very true to the characters, but it's also very relatable, like as a sibling. Like if you're if you ever see someone you know while you're driving, you're like, what? Who? How does this
here? How is this happening? Yeah. It's great. And then we have like kind of like the, I don't know if I would call it the main plot line, but the one that the most people are in.
Yes. Yeah. It is, of course, centered around JFK. So we've got Diego is obsessed with stopping the assassination of JFK. At the same time, we learn, you know, while the adult children are in the 1960s, they're trying to find out like what their dad is up to. And it turns out that Reginald Hargreaves also involved somehow in this JFK discussion. They end up stalking him at the Mexican embassy, which I thought was interesting because they find out he's part of some secret society talking about JFK's presence in Dallas and what they're going to do there. And there's just a lot around this whole thing. And then there's a family meeting later where everybody comes together and they're talking about JFK. So where do you want to start with this one?
I don't even know. Like,
it was hard to summarize.
Yeah, this is kind of like the reason they're doing all of this is because when Hazel tells Five, like when Hazel tells Five to go back in time and stop the apocalypse, he slips a tape into his pocket, which is the Frankel footage, which I believe is sort of a like reference kind of to the, I don't know,
Zapruder film.
Yeah, Zapruder film. Kind of in that same way. Like I do not believe that the Frankel footage is a real thing, but in that footage, it's like sort of home video of a couple who's near the grassy knoll at the time that Kennedy is shot. And they see when they freeze frame that their father there as well. So old Reggie Hargreaves is hanging around causing problems. And it's around that time where obviously Diego wants to stop the assassination. And Five is like, okay, we need to go find our father because clearly he has something to do with this. Honestly, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. Of like,
it doesn't. How is
he going to stop the apocalypse? But they're like, maybe dad will know.
Like, I get it. From like a, I don't know where else to go. I guess I'll go ask my parents.
Well, they're just adult children, like you said. And so they're like, they all 100% have daddy issues. This really could just be called Umbrella Academy : we all daddy have daddy issues.
Yeah.
We get some fun scenes. We get some fun interactivity between Luther and Diego and Five and all of them and how they all distrust Lila, but also are hanging out with her. hey, what's up? We don't really trust you, but thanks for saving our life. This plot is going to get tied in with the commission one as well, because of the Lila connection. Ooh. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird to begin with. It also really just teaches you that like if you thought old Reggie Hargreaves was an a-hole in season one, he's even worse in this season.
Oh yeah. Well, because through him we learn one, how Pogo was acquired and taught and all of that. So we learn about that. We learn about his obsession with Homer for some reason. We learn about basically like, so he knows that the kids are stalking him, but then he ends up like stalking them back and like doing all this weird stuff.
He's and always like a step ahead of them.
Yeah. That's how they get to this like family. It's like your presence has been requested at this, you know, family meeting type of thing. And they go to this like office building of his. It was very weird to have this family, very dysfunctional family meeting, and basically tell him, hey, we're your time traveling children.
Yeah. And he's like, I don't care.
Whatever.
You guys probably all failed me anyway. He just really sucks. He really does.
Yeah. But he's also dating like human
Grace.
Human Grace. and not Robot Grace?
Yeah. So Robot Grace is clearly based off of real human Grace, which it's so weird having, okay, Diego is Umbrella Academy, comma, Diego, colon, daddy issues and also mommy issues. Because
at least the Diego chapters for sure.
Yeah. Like Diego is, he has some interesting interactions with real Grace and, Lila, and then also probably the audience and anyone else around is like, is this like a romantic thing? Or like, I think to Diego, it's very much like mother sonly, but it's kind of unclear.
Agreed. Unclear is the way to put it. But yeah, everyone's kind of there. It was interesting to see how they tied Grace into it.
Yes.
Anything else on JFK/family meeting/Reginald Hargraves? Because well, I think we're getting to the point where we can connect it all.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a point in there also where we also deal with like original/first time future traveling five, like old man mm-hmm. five as mm-hmm. well. Who's also there. So that all gets connected, which I do think is fun. Like, I think it's fun that you end up seeing again the, like, time loop that Five travels back to the future the first time around in. Like, that part's kind of fun. And, like, when they throw the – when Klaus throws the fire hydrant, like, through the portal, and then you get to see it on this end as well. It's very fun.
Yeah, the five meeting five was pretty fun. But the key, as we've talked about throughout all of this review, the bridge between all of this is Lila and how mm-hmm. she's connected to the handler. We learn that Lila is actually the daughter of the handler, daughter adoptive-wise, much like Reginald adopted his children. The handler has adopted Lila, and that Lila was rescued from... the family after her family was killed by none other than Five.
Yeah.
Like, whoops. Talk about coming from tragedy. Like, this girl watched her family get killed and then learns that the person who saved her actually ordered the killing of her family. Like, whoa. It was a lot.
It's a lot.
The whole time you're kind of questioning, is Lila on the, whose side is she on? Where do her allegiances lie? Because at the beginning, you're just like,
where do her allegiances lie?
Yeah, nice. Right. I like it. Yeah. Because at first, she's like hanging out with Diego, and you think that she's really into him and that she's going to, you know, like team up with Diego. But then you learn, oh, hey, guess what? She's actually the daughter of the handler, and the handler has like a plan for her. And the whole reason why she's buddy-buddy with Diego is because of the handler. And then you learn once her mom gets like control of the commission, like Lila has her own ambitions to be, you know, head of security at the commission and is then using Diego for other things. So there are times where she's not necessarily on Diego's side is basically where I'm coming from.
Yeah, there's certainly times where she's not. I mean, that final battle is
yeah, agreed.
Clearly one of them. But she also like early on, her mom is, or the handler is like, well, why don't you just go kill Diego? That'll make you feel better. And she doesn't want to do that either right. at that point in time. So she clearly got some fondness for him.
She cares for him. Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes is the montage where they show Lila's backstory and they show like the handler training her and yeah. like teaching her languages, telling her to trust no one, dressing her up. And you think she's going to go to like prom or something. And then you see that she's like murdered a person. It's
or just the American Ninja like obstacle course, but yes. her mom's just like rapidly shooting bullets yeah. at her the whole time, and she's avoiding them. So you know that she's got some like skills, but at the same time, it's just very over the top, very, very, I guess, the handler, you know?
Yes. And based on everything, okay, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but is it to believe that Lila is also one of the same children?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I think she was born on the same day.
Yeah, Lila is also born on the same day, and this is not a Leonard Peabody situation because Lila actually does have powers.
Like all of the powers, like every power.
The only thing more powerful than Vanya is Lila because Lila has Vanya's power and everybody else's.
Yeah, Yeah, awesome. That was a fun reveal. That was fun. Yeah. Very fun. Anything like the handler, she ends up like gaining power because she asks Five to murder the board. Basically, she's like, hey, guess what? Like, you can get your family back to where your family needs to be. However, to do that, you have to kill the board, but you have to go to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and you have to go do this. And he's like, okay, fine, I'll do it. And then she ends up being in charge of the commission for a period of time.
Yeah. I kind of like how this season the handler is like, okay, I hate Five, kind of want him dead, but also he's like really powerful. Maybe he'll like help out some scenarios. So,
and he's like super good assassin. Like, he is very skilled assassin. Like, he went and he got it done in like no time.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, you know what? I said it before. I'll say it again. I love how this show does not shy away from just the brutal, like constant murdering of everybody. But also, we don't condone murder on this podcast. But
agreed.
In the show, it's entertaining the way they do it.
Yes. Yes. And I think some of that is through the Swedes too, because the Swedes, like, as we mentioned, just like don't talk or anything, but they're also like causing chaos for the handler as she's trying to take over the world, basically.
Yeah. Which, like, didn't the handler also kind of hire them? Like, maybe.
I know.
It's like, you're just creating problems for yourself, but okay. But yeah, they end up dying. Allison Rumor's one of them, which is also kind of intense.
Which was an interesting moment in the relationship of Allison and Ray, because Ray was like, there's a dead white guy on my couch. Or is this something you're used to doing? Like, it was the first time he actually saw like the consequence of what Allison could do, and that caused like a discussion to be had.
Right. And I mean, it's something that you kind of forget about, but like, back in season one, when they show them like children fighting montages, it's like, yeah, Allison's also a killer. Like, they kind of don't show it as much here. And because a lot of times she kind of rumors people to do things like walk away or whatever. But like, in the first season, she's like, I heard a rumor that you murdered every, you know, all your
friends, basically.
Your friends. Yeah. Like in the beginning of this season, she's like, I heard a rumor that I blew your minds and then all their brains explode. Like, that was pretty intense. So yeah, Allison, she's one of the family, you know?
Yeah. She's like, are we burning or burying? Like, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
And like, oh, one of the fun things that I thought that came out of, the whole JFK teaming up to find dad storyline was the creation of Team Zero, which is Luther and Diego. Like, they're like, no more numbers. Like, this is us, the family. We gotta go do this. We're Team Zero. Like, this is such a sibling thing that would have, like, sibling children, even sibling adult, like, thing that would happen. And I loved it because it serves its purpose in the story, but then later at the end in the final battle, like, Diego needs help and Luther helps him, and then they're like, Team Zero. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it kind of reminds me of a I don't know, like Legolas Gimli moment. Like, I don't know. They're just kind of teaming up, but it's, there's a not really Team Zero in the comics, but there is like a subplot where, Vanya and Diego like make a band, so like there are things like that.
it was very sibling, very fun. Speaking of siblings and fun, I do want to visit Klaus's storyline a little bit. Klaus, as we mentioned, started his cult, Destiny's Children. But during all of that, he does take time to find and connect with Dave. You remember, Dave was the man he fell in love with during the Vietnam War, where he was like back in time for a short amount of viewing time in season one. And he is basically trying to convince Dave, like, don't do it. Don't go to the war.
Which accidentally convinces him to go to the
war. Yeah. I mean, some things you can't escape, right? Like, no matter what happens, it's going to happen. But that, it was so sweet. Like, he like finds him at the hardware store, like asks what color paint he should get. He like takes every moment he can, and in every way he can, to try and convince him that war is not the answer.
Yeah, he tries. His heart's in the right place. And at first, Ben is really annoyed. He's like, oh, you're just like going to confuse the kid. This is creepy. You're stalking him. And Klaus is like, look, he's going to die in a couple years. Like, I'm trying to prevent that and trying to save his life here. And then Ben kind of allows him to do this. But it's sad, you know, like poor Dave. No matter what Klaus does, it's not going to work out. And we mentioned it before, but unfortunately, some of the situations with Dave here also result in Klaus relapsing. I don't know if that's really the right term, but like Klaus had been sober for the past 3 years since he was here. And then after that, he and Allison kind of go on like a binge drinking spree when they're both assessing the damage done to their lives by their time traveling and lying and dealing with their powers. Klaus has like some of the saddest moments and some of the just most ridiculous funny ones.
Yeah, I mean, they really gave themselves a playground when they were like, hey, Klaus, number one, this is your character. And then number two, you're a cult leader. And number three, you're in the 60s. Like, I think they could really do whatever.
It's very, like, hippie inspired.
Yeah.
What do you think of the cult in general and how?
Think it's, like, it's a great satire as to, like, what pop culture is like, hey, these song lyrics are life, and there are times where I have been like, U2 is everything to me. Like, I love U2. Anything Bono says is, I'm gonna follow Bono till the end of time.
Yeah, just like how this cult follows Klaus
exactly
from San Francisco back to Dallas,
and exactly
his like bus with the really fun like upper deck where you can just like hang out. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I mean, I wouldn't mind. It wasn't like a bad cult. Like, nobody like died really that we know of. Like, it was all right, and they had like a fresh garden and everything. It was pretty good. Good cult life.
Sure.
So, you know, if I was going to partake in cult life in the 60s, I would probably be part of Destiny's Children. And through this, like, Ben is also, as we mentioned, Ben is also around. And we do get the, you know, a scene where Ben possesses Klaus. And I even though we mentioned that Klaus partook in alcohol again after being sober for some time, he does start this whole Ben conversation, which I really appreciate, with ground rules. He's like, look, you can possess me. Okay, fine. I will let you do this, but you cannot cut my hair. You cannot do certain things with my body. You cannot do these things. I enjoyed the conversation about consent because it was like, I will allow you to do these things on these conditions. But the reason why Ben wants to do all of this is because he's in love with
Jill.
Jill. Yes. Love with Jill, and wants to talk to Jill, and Klaus lets him.
I was so on board with every part of this plot line until the one scene where he possesses Klaus and then he's talking to Jill and he's like, oh, Jill, like, you know, you're just so special or whatever. And she's like, yeah, you want to go hook up like we do all the time? And I was like, wait, no, what happened?
Wouldn't Ben know that? Like, that's,
I would think that Ben would have known that. Yeah. But apparently it didn't. Klaus, come on. But you know what? This is what happens when you don't communicate, right? If Ben had just said, like, I really like Jill from the beginning, then maybe we wouldn't have this just awkward situations. But you know what? Look, I don't know if we can attribute the possession to like Ben's powers or Klaus's powers. I feel like it's more Klaus. But hey, you know what? At least he's learning some things. Like, yeah.
I do think we also needed it for what happens between Ben and Vanya in the penultimate conflict to the story, because Ben also then goes in Vanya's thoughts. Like, I do think it's kind of letting the audience know that like Ben can go places that, right, you know, on his own. He doesn't need to just follow Klaus around everywhere. That purpose as well.
Yeah, and we find out actually a lot about like Ben and a little bit about his past as well, or like his reluctance to move on, and that's why he's sort of been here tied with Klaus. What did you think about that?
I think it was, you know, we do find that out when Vanya is being questioned by the FBI. She's high on drugs. She's in like her heightened state where she's mm-hmm. like a could be a bomb, basically. And Ben is the only one who can basically like penetrate her energy field to go there. So he's there talking to Vanya. And I thought it was one, a great way to let us know as the audience, you know, considering what we find out at the end of the season, you know, with the Sparrow Academy and Ben, you know, itself, it gave us a little bit of Ben's backstory that had pretty much been a mystery this entire time. But yeah. I have not read the comics.
Yeah. So. Well, it's a little different in the comics, but like Ben does not like choose to move on and sort of sacrifice himself in this way. But I feel like they kind of put this in so that we could be like, oh, Ben, we're gonna miss you. But based on what they do with, you know, from what we see at the end of this season about what's potentially coming in season three, I think they needed to separate Ben from yeah. Klaus in order to make that make sense.
Well, so. And it needed to be like a heel turn for the audience, because in this in Ben's like going away scene in this season, there's a very touching moment because Ben starts to, you know, he starts to fade. He lets us know that he can choose to go other places. And he, you know, was staying here because of everything. You know, he wanted to be close to his family, but he starts to fade. But then he asks Vanya to hold him as he does this. And this is like a very sincere, you know, outreach from him to us as the mm-hmm. audience. And then based on where we see Ben at the end of the season, it's a very different Ben, and it's a bit of a heel turn in my opinion, especially like very emo hair we get from Ben at the end.
Hey, everybody's gotta have different hair.
It's true, and everyone goes through their emo stages. I get it. I totally get it. But it's so different. And I think we needed that as an audience to be able to kind of get to season three.
Definitely. So anything else in terms of major plot points?
One thing we didn't really explore was the 5 versus 5 fight that happened, where there's a point in the season where 5, as you mentioned, realizes, you know, hey, okay, we can get back. You know who has a briefcase here? I do, because I've been here before and I have to just go find myself. which is a statement. I have to go find myself to get this suitcase so that, or this briefcase so that we can travel back.
This isn't a problem at all for the future and everything that may or may not happen.
I appreciate it though that they were like, but this can cause problems in the timeline, or this can cause timeline paranoia sickness or something. And these are the symptoms. And it was like extreme thirst, itching.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
All of these things. And you can kind of see both fives have symptoms at certain times. But I also love that they paired 5 and 5 with Luther.
Yeah.
As the babysitter in the situation, because Luther was just like, I don't know what to do. Like, they're like zip zapping around and he's just like, okay.
It's like, once again, make Allison do this, because she could just be, I heard a rumor you two were calm and sat down. Gosh.
Yeah. But it was funny. I you know, would I go back and find it caused me to ask that question.
No, I would not want to. I would not want to, mostly because I feel like, you know how you like have an image of yourself, and then if you watch a video of yourself or something, you're like, oh, that's cringy. I don't like the way I talk. I don't like the way I do this. I would not want to meet myself in person. That would just be stressful. I would overanalyze it.
Buy myself a donut and leave it for myself or something like that. Okay. I'd be like, here, enjoy this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or something.
I don't know. I feel like I always have the philosophy of like, I don't want to go back in time and change anything. I don't want to do it, because you learn from everything that's happened to you. And like, yeah, maybe you fix one thing, but like the ripple effect and all that. So let's just stay away.
I always, whenever I get deja vu though, I think I've been like, that is my time travel. Like I've been here before. I'm like, oh, okay. I've been here before. So every time I get deja vu, I'm like, hi, me. Hi.
That's a good thought.
how are you? Thanks for checking in. Yeah. Something like that. But yeah, nope, that wraps it up for me with major not ending of the season plot points. How about you? Anything we missed?
Nothing that I can think of. I mean, there, I'm sure there's stuff, but if there is, we'll talk about it in the next in the next okay. one. I like to, you know, just bring up things I miss whenever I get a chance. But yeah,
it's a good, that's a good plan.
That's about all we got now. We'll time travel back if we need to.
All right. Well, let's time travel to some sponsors and time travel back. We'll see you in a bit.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Right. Season two is coming to a close at this point. And we already talked a little bit about the setup. We first think that like Doomsday is coming. And as we learn through the Frankel footage, because at one point Diego goes to, you know, the commission and can actually see all vantage points of the assassination of JFK, mm-hmm. has to be like his heaven. I don't know. He was so excited to be able to see all of this. But he learned that like Vanya's energy explodes the federal building, which then impacts the assassination of JFK. And so it wasn't the assassination that was Doomsday. It was, again, Vanya. And so he convinces Klaus and Allison, and theoretically Ben, because he's just there, to go stop Vanya, because Vanya is being held in the federal building because Carl has basically accused her of, I don't know what to call it, like of adultery, of kidnapping, of, I don't know.
Carl.
Of differentness, of being different.
Basically, yeah. Of Vanya is not someone that Carl can instantly understand and identify with, and therefore she must be sent to be investigated by the FBI.
By the FBI.
Yeah. Why does the FBI have time for this? I mean, to be fair, Vanya is extremely dangerous. You're right. Oh my gosh. It's like that episode of Boy Meets World where everyone thinks that he's a Russian spy. Oh, yes. So good.
It was a thing. Like, that was a thing that happened on TV shows, like, all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that that's kind of like also with Ray and Allison, because he's like, who sent you? Was it the FBI? Was it like, you know, like, I think he kind of might also think that there's something going on there with her. Yeah, so Vanya is just the cause of the apocalypse every time, always.
Every time, always. But this time, like, their siblings, I mean, they wanted to stop her before, but this time I think they want to help her in a different way than, mm-hmm. like, putting her in a cage and confining her.
That's good.
Yeah. So there's growth. There's growth there. And
yeah, let's not lock people in cages.
And this is where Ben is able to withstand the energy field. He goes in. He ends up, you know, leaving, going somewhere. We don't know where until the very end. But when he does that, this is when Vanya wakes up and she's just like, hey, okay, like it didn't happen. Like, all right, we did it.
Okay, yay, prevented that apocalypse.
But did we?
I don't know.
Well, I say that because at the same time that all this is happening, while Vanya is feeling all this energy and doing all this stuff, Harlan back on the farm is experiencing the same thing. So when the first time I saw this, I was like, okay, so did the apocalypse move energy beings? Like, did it move from Vanya to Harlan? He was just going through everything at the same time.
Yeah, which seems to be connected based on the scene where Vanya gave Harlan CPR.
Right.
And the little red glowy thing went into his chest. Yeah, right. Something like that. So they're somehow connected. I don't know if that means that Harlan like has controllable powers or if he's just sort of more like a vessel for this at the moment. I wondered, I think
I hypothesized that he does have powers mainly because after this whole ending of the apocalypse at the federal building, they all end up going back to the barn. And when I say they all end up going back to the barn, that means the handler's also at the barn.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like the handler was after Harlan's powers. Like I think yeah. that he does have powers.
Yeah, at least at this point. I think the question is more like, did he always have some kind of powers or was it 100% just transferred from Vanya?
Fair point. Yeah, I don't know.
Unclear. But yeah, so he's there and this is when we get like the big fight.
Yeah.
The big showdown, which is where we learn that Lila has everybody's power. Her power is that she can like mimic other people's powers.
Like rogue-esque.
Yeah, it's a little OP. It's a little taskmastery. It's a little bit it's cool. It's a fun fight scene.
Where you yeah.
get to see it. Yeah.
Well, because we know she went through this vigorous training and we know she's a skilled assassin and we know all of this stuff. But when Vanya has like a big energy burst that basically mm-hmm. takes out a commission army that has come to help the handler. So she has this big energy burst and the handler's like, oh, that's so cute. Lila, it's your turn. And I'm like, what? It's whose turn? The what now? And she is able to do that. And then she's able to use rumor. She's able to do a lot of things. But in that time, we also learn that Diego does have feelings for her as well. Like he sees her and can understand her and talk to her and tries to talk her down from this escalating power grab.
Yeah, and it's a fun battle because you get to see everybody like have their powers used against them. Like mm-hmm. Allison gets rumored, mm-hmm. And Diego obviously with his knife thing. I love the fact that Lila always calls Diego Knife Boy. Like she says yes. that a lot of times too. That's funny. And then we discovered that Five has perfected his time traveling ability, at least to rewind time just by a few seconds to just lead to a moment.
Yeah. And I think in that time we see like a flashback, like we see Leonard from last season, like we see different time travel, different mm-hmm. time moments. And it's because of something his dad told him when he was a kid is like, it's not decades. Like you need to learn how to control seconds.
Yeah.
Like don't learn how to jump time that like big chunks of time, control seconds. And he was like, oh, I could do like, oh, okay, let me try that. And at that point he rewinds time 5 whole seconds. And this changes the fact that he got shot to the fact that the handler got shot. And that ends this big epic showdown in the battle.
Yeah. And big showdown. They acquire a suitcase and they get to go back in 2019.
I do have to say, I love Herb. The man who gives them the suitcase, he's just like your quintessential bureaucratic worker. Like he loves his job. He probably loves every form he has to fill out. And he's a big fan of Diego, who we learn when Diego goes to the commission is considered number two. Well, he is number two, but like they know he's number two. So it was just, it's just a fun little, I hope we see some Herb helping out in season 3.
He's one of those actors who I just feel like looks so familiar, but I don't recognize anything he's in besides this. I think it's just, he just has like a very distinct look and he's just so like adorable in this mm-hmm. show. I don't know. Like he, when he's like telling the handler that she got demoted and she walks in and tries to sit in his desk and he's like, oh, that's actually my desk though. Yeah. And then she like throws a nameplate at him. Oh, so good.
Yeah. Big ups to Herb. I liked it. But yeah, then they take the suitcase and they go back to 2019, but they land the day after the Vanya apocalypse 1 was supposed to happen. So they're like, oh, wow, we did it. We made it. So cool. Oh, wow. Let's go live our happy lives. Let's get a drink. Let's go. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. What? There's something different about this house. Uh-huh. What's going on? Why is Ben's portrait above the mantle? What? And that's when we get good old Reggie Hargraves. It's like, I knew you were going to be here. This isn't the Umbrella Academy. This is the Sparrow Academy.
Ooh. And
emo Ben shows up.
What? Ben's alive. Yep. So we've got a very different story coming ahead of us. Do you like the fact that we're going back to present day?
I do. Yeah. I hope we – I hypothesize we'll go future day if there is time travel.
You think we'll jump? Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. But I would totally be happy if there isn't, because there's enough happening in the present, I think, to contain us to the present, which is really the past. It's 2019. So, you know, the show's present, but our past, there's enough going on between the Sparrow Academy. Like, who are these people? I don't know who these people are. And also, like, what did the people that we do know do with that? How do we handle all that? So that's enough, I think, to keep them in this time.
Yeah, I think they've got a lot of opportunity to do a lot of really cool things. We kind of mentioned it in our initial kickoff show, but like, what about the main characters? Where are they? Do they exist in this timeline as well? Has their entire original timeline been erased? Is that a parallel universe? Like, what's happening? Because it kind of seems like it's been erased if there was no Umbrella Academy.
But there was still the birth of these children. So that's the only, like, I'm assuming is the birth of these children with these powers. So maybe they all were still born, but not all were adopted by Reginald Hargraves.
Yeah, I love the idea that Hargraves always adopted 7 children, but it's just a completely different 7 children.
Except for Ben. Ben got chosen all the time.
Yeah, it's always Ben. Yeah.
What did you think between the two seasons? Do you have a preference between season 1 or season 2?
It's hard because, like, you know, people always go think it, like, people like origin stories. They like season 1 because it's the first time you're meeting the characters. There's definitely a lot of introductory stuff I like. But I think plot-wise, actually, and like jokes even, there's so much from season 2 I really, really like. Like, I know the first time I watched it, I definitely liked season 2 way better. I think I'm my second, I think they're a little closer, a little more even, but they both have iconic moments. And something about season 2 is just like lighter, like even literally there's more daylight, I feel like, in this season, and everybody's a bit more, I don't know, having fun with their plots, it seems like just the characters themselves. They're kind of living in this like, oh well, got nothing to lose kind of attitude.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate knowing the backstory of everything. I really do enjoy, like, season 2 is my season over season 1 because of that. Like, I just feel like the characters are much more developed. The actors are living in those characters a lot better. And we're able to really explore just like their perspectives on life, not necessarily how they got to those perspectives in life, which I totally understand in an origin story you need to have. But this is like a real heavy one. Like, I mean, Batman's heavy. Batman's got a heavy origin story. And there's only so many times we can visit it, people. There's only so many times.
And I think what I really liked about this season also is that, like, besides the fact that it's a period piece, which is kind of fun, I don't know, hybrid period piece.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the idea that because of the events in season 1 where, you know, the siblings were all meeting each other again for the first time in many years in season 1, but because they spent, even though it was a short amount of time, a little bit of time together in this season, like when they all reunite, they're much more excited to see each other. Like, yes. Just the scene of Klaus and Allison, like she's running, jumps into the pool to hug him and stuff, like, you feel like they're a little closer. They're getting to know each other more. They're acting more siblingish. Whereas in the first season, it was a lot of like, we don't even know each other. Like, oh, you know, we're all such lone wolves, you know, separate. And in this season, there's a bit more. Like, they obviously have still arguments and rivalry and whatever, but they act more like people who know each other.
Agreed. Is there anything that didn't work for you this season at all?
Diego's hair. I think Luther's storyline didn't work for me. Mostly just, and it's actually, that's one of the things I can talk about it now, like a couple of the differences between the comic books and this mm-hmm. season. So the second comic book is just called Dallas, or the second collection. And it really, like, all pretty much has to do with JFK, and it's all set around that. There's a lot of differences, though, in that, like, in season two is actually when Hazel and Cha-Cha are introduced. I mean, sorry, in the Dallas comic is when they're introduced, and that's when they kidnap Klaus, and that's when Klaus goes back to Vietnam. And that's because of events surrounding that is actually how the apocalypse happens. It's Klaus causes it, not Vanya. So there's because after Klaus escapes Hazel and Cha-Cha, he deactivates a missile with the help of a ghost, but he doesn't do it properly because the nukes detonate and destroy the world instead. So there's a bit of a difference there. And then let's see, there's like the whole plot, instead of having Diego, like his connection with JFK being that he's trying to stop the assassination, instead the commission is blackmailing Five and Allison that the commission's going to kill them unless they go assassinate Kennedy. So they're actually, Allison and Five are on a mission to assassinate Kennedy. So that's a bit different. In the show, Allison's storyline is completely different. Basically, she's working with other people. But this is what I was going to say about Luther. Is Luther's storyline is pretty similar, just in that he's like, they kind of do it in the show, but he in both the show and the story, he's like starts eating as a coping mechanism for his loneliness. And also the fallout from the first season where he feels like he wasn't enough for his father and like feels like he's not a hero and missing Allison and all of that. And then everything with Lila is completely invented for the show. None of that is in the comics. AJ Carmichael is the fish boss is in the comics, but the like kind of is a lot like he's the direct like commission reference, like the handler is made up in the show, so there's that intermediary is not there. And I feel like they probably use the handler because it would be a little bit easier than being like, hey, introducing you to a new show, accept this fish person like from the get-go. Instead we get to wait until season two to where that happens. So there's a lot of smaller things, like Pogo's sort of backstory is a little bit different. Like in the show, they actually make his lab experiments seem a little bit more humane, but in the comics, it's a lot more like, Hargreaves is not great. It's much more horrifying. Whereas instead they make Hargreaves and Grace in the show sort of like care for Pogo more like he's like a child of theirs. That's not really what happens. This one's pretty funny. So the three Swedes are original for the show, but it's inspired by a line from the comics where there's a fight between Luther and Diego, and Luther accuses his brother of being so paranoid that he'd, quote, think mom is plotting to take over the world or the milkman is an intergalactic assassin. And so that's kind of where they got the idea there.
Nice. Well, I'm glad that they, like, I think they made good choices in embellishing, like, making it different enough from the comic that you could enjoy both at the same time.
Yeah, I think so, too. Like, there's enough that's sort of inspired by each other. You know, like, I don't know if this is just me for this particular property. I'm like, oh, it's fun that they're different. Because then I can enjoy both. Whereas like almost every other adaptation, I'm always like, oh, it was different. It was different in the book or oh, whatever, you know, but for whatever reason, and maybe it's because I saw the show first, but I'm kind of like, oh, this is just, it's cool that there's like a different thing going on. Although I guess I feel the same way about Riverdale in a very different manner of speaking, but they're just so different. Yeah. So, a question for you. I asked you this after the first season. I'm going to ask you again. Obviously, we mentioned it before. The soundtrack's amazing.
Yes.
Did you have a notable music moment in this season?
It would be the Swedish cover of Hello by Adele was one of my favorite things ever. The music this season was fantastic. Like, I was singing along. I was dancing. I also enjoyed the scene in the salon where Klaus, Vanya, and Allison were dancing. Oh, it was a callback to Dancing in the Dark from season one. But they did a really good job of using period-specific songs done in a different way, except for well, the Swedish connection was there with the Adele, but Adele's kind of like, you know, a 60s type of singer, I would say. But all of the music I loved this entire season. How about you?
The battle where Five and Lila and Diego are fighting the Swedes and they play I Was Made for Loving You by Kiss, really loved that. Montage was really fun. There are so many. There is, like, every time Klaus is on the screen, they're going to give him a montage and an awesome song. So there's a lot of those moments. But I really liked the fight scene here. That was good. And of course, at the very, very, very beginning, when they show the original Apocalypse and them all Avenger style fighting together, playing My Way, and that was a fun moment too. Just because everything's in slow motion, and you're seeing all their powers. That's a fun part. But yeah, so many good songs. I was going to bring up the salon scene as well, because I think, like, the first time around also, you're like, this is the callback to season one, like you said.
It was good times. Good times. Well, those are our good times for season two. We've made it through two seasons of recapping, almost ready for season three. Like I said, next week we will have a kind of nuts and bolts recap, kind of noting the major moments from both seasons in preparation for season three, a little bit of talk of what we hope to see in season three, beyond what we've already discussed today. And then we'll be off to the races with season three. Can you believe it's almost here? Like, next week.
I can't. Like, this what? Has already gone by so quickly to me, but I feel very prepared for it now that I have rewatched the first two seasons. And don't worry, everyone, you have time. I watched them in only a few days. So you can do it. You can do it. Just do 1.5x. It's fine.
Or even, like, I hope our recaps got you in a position where you feel like you could watch. I feel like you could even probably not watch season one. Like, you could go back and watch season one if you really wanted to get into season. Like, I feel like you could. I mean, this is without seeing season three.
Sure. I think, like, the most important thing is, like, watch the last, I don't know, 15 minutes of season two. And
you'll probably be all ready
for season three.
Agreed. So, like I said, you can find us at postshowrecaps.com/umbrella-academy-feed. You can catch all of our episodes there. Mary, where else can people find you and adaptations you may or may not be talking about?
Oh yeah, it's all adaptations. I am at everywhere at Frail Mary, so you can check me out on every platform there. You can check me out on Instagram, where I mostly talk about running, so if you're interested in something completely different, there's that. And Marvel movies. It's really just those two things on Instagram. And you can check out Kowski Cast, which is Cal with a K, for my coverage of Riverdale, the aforementioned Riverdale coverage, which, if you like superhero content, if you like wacky superhero content, you'll like what's happening with Riverdale season six. If you like anything else, you'll be like, what is going on? But it's fine, because that's how we all feel. So maybe let's just embrace the weird that's happening.
Always embrace the weird, I think, is a good motto to live by. Fantastic. Well, I could be found and heard on the Staircase podcast, just ended, here on Post Show Recaps, recapping the story of Michael Peterson and the Peterson family and some stairs. So if you're into true crime and family dynamics, kind of almost as dramatic as the ones here, you can check out that podcast in the HBO feed. I also will be on Community Building this Friday, so you have a chance to join us live or catch us in your podcast feeds later, but I am excited to revisit Community. I haven't watched Community in a while, so I'm excited to talk to you, Jess and Josh, about that. And then otherwise, I'll be here talking Umbrella Academy with you, Mary. And I will talk about pretty much anything else in the Patreon Discord. If you want to join us, you can go to patreon.com/PostShowRecaps. And if you join us at any level, you can get access to our Discord, including a thread dedicated specifically to Umbrella Academy. So if you want to talk to both Mary and myself about the show, we'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your theories. What are you excited for season 3? And we can all see if we're right or wrong on all of them as the show kicks off next on the week, on the 22nd.
I fully expect to be wrong.
Yeah, the best. It's so fun being wrong. I love being wrong when it comes to this stuff.
That's one of my favorite things about like a rewatch podcast and stuff is I'll go back and listen to one after I've seen the new season and hear all the theories, and I'll be like, wow, they were so wrong. I'm just listening to this.
Well, thanks again to everyone for joining us in this session of Academy, Umbrella Academy. Wow. Yeah, it's time to go. I'll see you all later. Thanks.
Bye.